We return now to a much happier story from Africa, that of environmental and human rights activist Wangari Maathai. Professor Maathai has written a memoir recounting her rise from life as a village girl in the countryside of Kenya to a celebrated green leader and winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. The book is called Unbowed. Last week, we spoke with her about her education and her early activism. We continue the conversation this week, beginning with the tale she tells in her book about a fig tree near her childhood home.
Well, the story of the fig tree is a very interesting story because when I was growing up, I was like all the other girl children of my age. I would collect fire and I would fetch water from the nearby stream. And I remember that my mother told me not to collect firewood from the fig tree. And I asked her why. And she said, because that tree is a tree of God. We don't burn it, we don't cut it, we don't use it for building. We let them stand for as long as they are able to. And I didn't think about it until much, much later when I became more conscious about the role of trees in the environment. And then I appreciated the wisdom of our people in not cutting some of these trees, treating them as if they were sacred. And it was much later that I realized that these trees were very important for the stabilization of the land, stabilizing the soil, making sure that you don't have landslides, and also making sure that a lot of the water that is in the ground is brought up from the underground, from the belly of the earth, along the roots of these trees. So they were very, very important in the ecological system.
And when you went back as an adult in your later years, what had happened to that tree?
Unfortunately, when we introduced cash crops, coffee, tea, sugar canes, the tree was considered useless. It was no longer a holy tree because people were now Christians. And so it was cut to make way for tea bushes. Fortunately, nothing has ever grown in the particular site where that tree was. It is as if only a fig tree was supposed to be there.
And what happened to the water? You said that the roots of the tree would bring up water. What happened to the water that was there?
Very close to the fig tree, there was this little stream. And I mentioned in the book that I used to play with frog eggs and with tadpoles in this stream. And this is the stream from which I would fetch water for my mother. But when this tree was cut, that stream also dried up. We often take these trees, we often take the ecosystem for granted, partly because we don't understand how they are linked with each other and how together they create a harmony that makes life possible.
I'd like to talk to you directly about your memoir for a moment, which came out not so long ago, and it is fittingly called
Unbound.
And can you tell me about the title?
We were trying to reflect the fact that even though we have gone through such a difficult life and we have gone through so many trials and tribulations, we continue to walk tall and proud. Unbowed.
I think one of the most amazing things about the story you wrote about yourself in the Green Belt Movement is that you didn't stop with teaching people about basic tree science or ecology, or you went so deep. You addressed some of the matters of the heart and soul that can keep a people down. And in your book, you describe how when missionaries came to Kenya, they changed not only people's religion, but the manner of dress, names, the music, the days on the calendar, even the very meaning of your tribe, Kikuyu and others. I mean, Kikuyu came to mean primitive.
Well, that is the tragedy of any people who are colonized. Those who colonized had come to convince people that they are backward, that they don't have anything worth saving, that they need to emulate the lifestyle and the faith of those who have colonized them. And because those who colonized were often, you know, they had advanced technology. They came by ship, by horses, by trains. And so the natives were completely overwhelmed by the technology and the knowledge that the newcomers seemed to have. And so in that process, the colonizers, as I say, had perfected a system that was extremely powerful, and especially the region, because when you tell people about a God you never see, a God you can never ask questions, you can never go to God and say, God, are these people telling me the truth, or are they manipulating me so that I am vulnerable? You can't ask God those questions. So it's a very, very powerful way of controlling people so that you can access and exploit their resources.
At one point you write that the, and I'm quoting here, the trauma of the colonized is rarely examined. Steps are rarely taken to understand and redress it. Instead, the psychological damage passes from one generation to the next until victims recognize their dilemma and work to liberate themselves from the trauma. How do you see that psychological damage from the years of colonization under the British still present today?
Well, it is everywhere. You see it everywhere. You see it in the way people are disempowered, in the way that people don't believe in themselves, in the way that people believe that they are less than those who colonized them. And it is made worse by the fact that those who became the new rulers, who are natives, even they have that indoctrination. They literally continued to govern in the same way that the masters were governing. And that has been part of the problem of Africa. We need to decolonize the minds of people who have been colonized. Until you decolonize those minds, it's very, very difficult for the colonized to liberate themselves from the burden of self-doubt, the burden of self, sometimes even self-hatred that they have. And the tragedy is they don't know that that's what has happened to them, because quite often what has happened to them is projected as progress. It is projected as development.
Now, I know one area where you've been raising awareness is the importance of the vast tropical rainforest in Africa's Congo Basin, which is so much less known than the Amazon rainforest. How's that going?
That's going very well, and I'm very, very happy that the climate change discussion is gaining momentum. And people are recognizing that one of the ways in which we can help the planet is by planting trees, but also by protecting the trees that are standing. So I hope that governments that have money will help the African governments so that they can protect that forest from logging. Because it's also important to say that the logging is not being done by local people. The logging of these forests is usually done by big timber companies from developed countries. So considering that it is the developed countries that have contributed so much to the greenhouse gases that are causing the warming up of the earth, it is only appropriate that they too should participate in assisting governments not only to stop the logging, but to help with the rehabilitation of the logged areas.
I want to mention something personal to you. I live in New Hampshire, and it's an old, old house. It's 250 years old. And there's a sugar maple. There's a bunch of sugar maples that were planted probably not long after the house was built. And one of them has run out of time. It's probably 175 years old. The wires that have been holding it together and the other efforts that have been made to keep it going, just nothing more can be done, and it has to come down. In fact, I think it's going to come down tomorrow.
I'm so sorry to hear that. But it also means that we understand that all living things come to an end. And the only thing we can say is that after so many years of service, that tree is ready to be recycled. How wonderful it would be if all of us would be recycled when our time comes, and we would be able to say, like that tree, I have done my part.
Professor Mathai, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And I want to give you the opportunity to say anything else that you'd like to say.
What I would just like to remind our listeners that recently in Nairobi, we launched a Billion Tree campaign. We are appealing to all the people in the world, throughout the world, wherever you are, whoever you are, if you can plant a tree. There are 6 billion of us. If at least one out of six planted a tree, we would very easily reach our target. It is not as if we shall solve all the crises of the climate with those billion trees, but at least it's one way of doing something to contribute towards solving the problem. Let us be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Wangari Mathai, winner of the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Wangari Mathai is Kenya's Deputy Minister of the Environment and founder of the Greenbelt Movement. Her new memoir is called Unbowed. You can hear the first part of our conversation with Wangari Mathai, as well as a one-hour documentary about her life at our website, loe.org. You can also find information there about her campaign to plant 1 billion trees. The only thing is, you have to help. I'm already on the hook to replace my big old maple tree that has to come down. Just ahead, some good news, kinda, about the bird flu. There's a vaccine for humans, but it only works about half the time, and there's not enough for everyone. Keep listening to Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment. And from you, our listeners, and from member stations. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.